This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 26th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 419. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, a triple feature. Will Vancouver be ready for the FIFA World Cup next year? Will Vancouver be safe and at what cost? At the Vancouver International Security Summit, I caught up with RCMP Assistant Commissioner John Brewer. Meanwhile, Mayor Ken Sim wants an election year budget without a property tax increase, so layoffs are coming to Vancouver City Hall. Hear Deputy City Manager Karen Levitt reveal what that means for hosting FIFA. Plus, it was one of those weeks when Vancouverites do not miss having an NBA franchise. The association rocked by a gambling scandal involving the mafia. Among those arrested, the coach of the Portland Trailblazers and a guard from the Miami Heat. Declan Hill, the investigative journalist and author of two books on match fixing, is my guest. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The FIFA World Cup is coming to BC Place in Vancouver just over 32 weeks. But before that, in just 26 weeks, FIFA's annual Congress at the Vancouver Convention Center at the end of April. Will Vancouver be ready? Will Vancouver be safe? And at what cost? Some of the officials who are planning security appeared October 17th at the Vancouver International Security Summit. While the Vancouver Police is in command in the city of Vancouver, the RCMP wears more than one hat. It is the federal police, it is the provincial police across BC, and it has contracts in Vancouver's neighboring municipalities like Burnaby, North Vancouver, Richmond, and UBC. I started by asking Assistant Commissioner John Brewer about preparing for a major pre-tournament event, the 76th FIFA Congress at the Vancouver Convention Center at the end of April. It is the only FIFA event of the World Cup year in North America that involves all 211 member nations.
Yeah, Bob, thanks. That's a great question. You'll notice during this that never came up. So as you rightfully put out, the FIFA Congress is 200 and some odd heads of their various football associations, which includes heads of those states, royalty, certainly sons, daughters, that. It's a huge security event, and it will be a security event because it's not open to the public. It's also, there's a number of internationally protected persons going to be part of that. So the BCRCMP are working with the local police jurisdiction, with Vancouver, with the surrounding jurisdictions, because we're not sure where they're all going to be staying yet. And then federally, of course, with protective services to ensure that the intel is being shared internationally with all the different groups, but also to make sure that we have the right security footprint to ensure that the adequate protection at the venue they're going to be at, but also where they're staying, and the transit routes in between for these individuals, and working with their security details, which some surely will have.
And then the amount of unknowns you're working with, you referred to the FIFA draw. We'll find out who most of those 48 nations are. We know Canada's playing here twice.
Right.
But most of those 48 nations will be decided December 5th. A few wild cards left until the new year.
Yeah.
How difficult does that make your job?
Yeah, extremely difficult. I mean, it's the difference between a small country from Africa, say, versus an England, versus a Brazil, an Iran. Like, all these different countries bring within their own security issues, certainly, that we have to prepare for. So right now, we're working on, I want to say, the good, better, best. I'll use the Shell Buzzy rather than worst case scenario. But we're working on that we will get a number of very high-profile countries, and perhaps some countries that geopolitically may cause concern with security matters. And so that's the scenario we're dealing with. And then it's always easier to adjust down. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm trying to adjust up.
So you've got 40 people working in your group. How is that going to change or scale up in the months to come?
Yeah, so right now they're focused on planning, preparation, and reaching out to other agencies. They will start to now switch from the planning phase into the execution phase, and some of those people will change jobs and actually go into being in charge of physical sites. They'll have roles that deal directly with liaison of certain groups. They'll have roles within our fusion center, as opposed to right now where they're really gathering information and putting up for planning purposes into various technologies we have for intel sharing and also interagency cooperation.
FIFA World Cup 26 is the biggest mega event in Vancouver since the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics. Back then, the RCMP was in charge of the overall security operation. Fast forward to present day, there are more security threats. I asked Brewer about security visibility around Vancouver in June and July 2026.
Yeah, certainly. You will see an increased police presence across the board. You will, both within the host city with Vancouver. The RCMP will play a part in supporting the host city police agency with Vancouver, but also we'll be dealing with the surrounding area as well, including the other municipal agencies there. And so what I want for success is someone can move from Delta through to the game and back. I also want to make sure that people at work in the city of Vancouver or work outside can also transit in and out. That's success for me, and we're building our plans to accomplish that by making sure transit corridors will be open and readily used, not just for local residents, but also for the people coming to the games.
So how big will the force be? You know, the city of Vancouver is jurisdiction here, but yeah, federal plays a big role. How many hundreds or thousands of uniforms, as well as people behind the scenes, are we going to look at?
Yeah, so again, I talked about the unknowns, and right now, so the unknowns, because we're planning for that, the biggest use I will need, we're certainly into the near the thousands writ large when it comes to the federal, provincial, and municipal side, specialized units coming in that are going to have to support all the different agencies here. And then my hope is once we've got, come January 5th, we'll know who's coming, and then from the weeks after that, be able to scale our security plan accordingly and hopefully down.
Mm-hmm. I have been in touch with Public Safety Canada a number of times over the months just to find out, well, what is the update? Because Public Safety Canada includes the RCMP,
right?
Customer Support Services Agency, right, and other agencies, yes, as well, about what the budget is. They're telling me that the budget you're working with now is basically through existing resources. There isn't yet a dedicated budget to it. Of course, we do have the federal budget coming November 4th. Maybe we'll be enlightened then, but from your standpoint, where is it now? What is the budget for the RCMP?
Yeah, so I'll tell you right now, we don't have a set budget. And again, part of that is because we don't know the unknowns yet. Mm-hmm. And what I don't want is to say to the very levels of governments, here's the budget we need, to find out that we're too low, right? Or even too high, right? I don't want sticker shock either. And so we're locked into that January 5th to kind of see, then we'll know, because we're planning for everything, right? All the different teams and what they bring to it. What I will say is the commissioner of the RCMP, Mike Dehem, he is now chairing a bi-weekly meeting with the heads of the host cities, as well as the OPP, the BC RCMP, to make sure that for the national coordination portion, that the RCMP nationally is well linked in with all those groups to ensure that we have the proper coordination nationally, but also so then we can link internationally.
Will the RCMP be part of the multi-party agreement? And I understand there isn't yet a multi-party agreement. Like there was during the Olympics, that was signed before the bid was decided, but here we are months away. The multi-party agreement isn't there yet.
Yeah, and I don't, Bob, I don't have any answer for you on that. Certainly it's important. But having said that, we will still move forward. We have a great a history of cooperation and interoperability between various levels of government in the province of British Columbia, but also with the various security agencies and nonprofits and private security as well.
I guess maybe one more question. What risks are you looking at or concerned about now? I mean, we've seen a lot of protest activity for a variety of issues on our streets here in Vancouver. You alluded to what happened at the airport, the interior with the hacking. Yeah. There's, and again, we've got a situation here with the RCMP has been very vocal about just the situation with addictions, repeat violent offenders.
Yeah.
Where are we looking at
Yeah, certainly, you know, the FIFA event coming to Vancouver will only add to existing issues and concerns, for sure. That's all factored in to our planning. So I will say that we are alive to the threats of cybersecurity issues. The hacking just happened as well. But the role of the RCMP is not just to be the boots on the ground as well and support the agencies as well as where we are, the municipal police and the provincial police as well, but to ensure there is that regional and national coordination role that the RCMP naturally plays and has played effectively both with 2010. We just did it with G7, we did it with Invictus. So, you know, all the agents involved are used to that role and we are well placed to continue that.
Vancouver City Hall is bracing for layoffs after Mayor Ken Simmons' majority on City Council ordered a 2026 budget with no tax increase. On October 16th, City Manager Donnie Van Dyke and Deputy City Manager Karen Levitt spoke to staff. Van Dyke and Levitt both say that cutbacks will not affect the World Cup. TheBreaker.news obtained video of the staff meeting, and here are some of the highlights.
And obviously a big part of Karen's portfolio and the work she's doing right now is FIFA and preparing for next summer. So Karen, just if you can speak at a high level around FIFA, how is all of this going to affect the delivery of FIFA? How are we paying for FIFA? Does this change anything for FIFA? I know we've had a few questions both pre-submitted and from the floor about the intersections here.
Yeah, thanks, Maria. Good morning, everybody. So As probably all of you know, Vancouver is the official host city for 7 matches of the FIFA World Cup next summer. And what that means technically is that we've signed a contract with FIFA to do a whole bunch of things to prepare for and deliver that event, including the matches at BC Place, including a fan fest at the PNE and various other things. We're doing that in partnership with a number of other agencies, namely YVR doing the airport stuff, Pavco is running the stadium, PNE is hosting the fan fest and so on. So we have no wiggle room in terms of delivering what we need to deliver. It's a contractual obligation. We're hard at work, and many of you, I'm sure, have been working with our host committee, with Jesse Adcock, Tanya Gilhold, and the team to prepare for that. So these changes, restructuring, changes in budget funding, will not impact the way we deliver FIFA. We are working on a piece we're calling organizational readiness to make sure that all of the staff areas have sufficient staff through June and July next year to deliver what we need to deliver in two ways. One is for the FIFA event, and the second is for just running the city while the FIFA event is going on over about a 6-week period. And part of those tools will be vacation management. That was going to happen regardless of what happened with the 2026 budget. And you'll be hearing more about that in the coming weeks. And just, I guess, the last thing I'd say about FIFA is that the FIFA, preparing for and delivering FIFA is not city funded for the most part. The city's contribution to FIFA is capped at $5 million, which is a tiny fraction of the, let's just say in round numbers, $600 million that this event is going to cost. And the great majority of that funding is coming through a hotel tax called the MRDT, through FIFA related revenues like commercial sponsorships, rental revenues for venues, federal government funding, some provincial funding, and so on. So FIFA will go ahead as planned.
Thanks, Karen. Karen, I was going to let you go, but real-time operations here. I just had a question come in from the floor from Mary Ellen. She's asking about the $5 million city contribution to FIFA. Does that include in-kind staff time, VPD cuts, and that? How does that work? What is in that $5 million bucket that's part of the much broader piece that the MRDT and the province is funding?
Thanks for that question, Mary Ellen. It's a little bit of a complicated story. The answer is that $5 million is $5 million cash. I think it's $1 million a year and then $2 million in the last year we're paying into this pool that is the FIFA budget. And what we're allowed to count, this is a really important point I should have mentioned, so thanks for bringing it up, Mary Ellen. What we're allowed to count as FIFA costs is costs that are incremental to our day-to-day business. So we always clean streets, but we're going to be cleaning a lot more streets a lot more times a day during FIFA. So we can count that incremental effort as a FIFA cost. And we've been very scrupulous. We're working with the province to very carefully control costs on FIFA. But that $5 million itself is cash. And I hope that answers your question. Thanks.
October 23rd, bombshell in the world of sports. During the opening week of the NBA season, the FBI announced that it busted a mafia-linked sports and poker gambling scheme. Portland Trailblazers coach Chauncey Billups and Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier are the big names arrested. At least seven games were identified by the FBI, evidence of insider information that helped gamblers. Now, Rozier even is accused of faking an injury. And joining me to talk about this, early hours of this scandal, basically on October 23rd, is Canadian investigative reporter and academic Declan Hill. He's an associate professor at the University of New Haven Sports Integrity Center. He's the host of the Crime Waves podcast and author of two books on match fixing. He was a guest last February on the Breaker.News podcast on Super Bowl Sunday, where we talked about the explosion of sports gambling, government-blessed sports gambling on both sides of the U.S. and Canada border that threatens the integrity of sport and the health of sports fans. Declan, where does this rank for you in sports corruption and sports gambling scandals, and how does it compare to the controversy a couple of decades ago of Tim Donaghy, the NBA referee who was caught gambling?
Because it hasn't gone through court. We haven't seen, I'm sure, the 31 people that were arrested today. There's going to be a number of those guys that are innocent. It was always the case that, you know, I was just happened to be at a poker game with organized crime and I didn't know it. So let's just talk in general terms. My sense of this scandal is this is really tip of the iceberg. If any of our listeners or viewers think that this is one sport or one league, they're living in a dream world. What is happening now is the same levels of gambling addiction that we're starting to see across British Columbia and the rest of Canada are rife in sports. In fact, they're even larger. If you're an athlete, your very personality makes you more prone to gambling addiction. So gambling and gaming addiction is just rife from high school sports down here, NCAA, across major professional sports and into the Olympics as well. So that's number one. Number two is the global nature of this alleged organized crime syndicate. There were Albanians, there were Chinese, Vietnamese, no surprise to anyone in Vancouver, of course. There was the traditional La Cosa Nostra guys, the Bonanno, the Genovese, the Gambino guys were all implicated by the DOJ today. So this is a major issue, but judging from my studies, my research, this is, again, tip of the iceberg stuff.
Tip of the iceberg, it also happens not only during the first week of the NBA season, but this is an era of the NBA that has embraced legalized gambling. The NBA is inching towards someday a franchise in Las Vegas. It has tournaments in Las Vegas. It also has corporate sponsorship with the likes of FanDuel and DraftKings and other gambling entities. It is helping sell the product to its viewers. It's basically selling its viewers to the gambling companies.
They've been dancing with the devil since November 13th, 2014, when Adam Silver, the then and current commissioner of the NBA, wrote saying that we should legalize sports gambling. I agree. We should also regulate it effectively and properly and protect wide sections of our society that are gambling addicts or potential gambling addicts. But it's got to be regulated. And one of the things that's got to be regulated is the relationship between sports leagues and sports bookmakers. There has to be clear blue water between these corporations. How now can one of your viewers and listeners who's a sports fan be looking at a game, be it the NHL, MLB, NBA, whatever, and when someone makes a genuinely honest mistake, isn't in the back of their mind going, was that an honest mistake or is there something else that's going on here? It really needs to be addressed and it's not being addressed properly. Now, on that note, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. on November the 6th, the local senator here, a guy named Richard Blumenthal, along with a Republican, have brought forward a kind of just basic regulation of gambling. And I'm shocked to say, once again, the Americans, I'm a Canadian, as you know, the Americans are well ahead of the federal Canadian Parliament, both the Tories and the Liberals. We just need basic, simple, national regulation of gambling, be it at a consumer level, but also at the sports leagues level. And we also need to address the really serious gambling addiction that hits most athletes. Excuse me, not all athletes, but many in the athletes' world.
How do we protect the players from these forces? because there's gamblers out there who are looking at it and saying, if we can get closer to the players,
no,
and
easy, get the player, it's so easy. How long have you and I been speaking about this? For years. Every one of your listeners is going to be, oh, that guy again. Yeah, I heard him in Super Bowl the last time. But every time I come on, I say the same thing. Most of the gambling education for athletes is run by bookmakers. Guess what they forget to tell their athletes, their students, that they are really, really likely to become addicted to gambling, much more higher than the general population. Somehow they always seem to forget that little factoid when they're giving them education and stuff. This is the issue that we're dealing with here, rife gambling addiction. And one final thing that I'd like to add to for this interview is poker games. You see this in this particular DOJ indictment. Poker games, I've seen this in my infiltration of organized crime. I've talked to other undercover investigators. Poker games are used by organized crime to recruit not the celebrities, not just big athletes, but they're looking around for the degenerate gambler, their words. They're looking around for the big whale to bring them into their network to start a long-term relationship. And these poker games, it's the same thing in the Shohei Ohtani translator case. These are the recruiting grounds for these illegal organized crime bookmakers.
And one real quick question before you go is, what do you think is next, especially in this environment when the biggest sporting event in the world is coming to North America next year, the FIFA World Cup? What is next?
But I know one thing for certain. Well, two things. One is that number of those people will be proven innocent. And two, there's going to be a major media marketing campaign by sports leagues to pretend that there's nothing to see here, that just ignore this, just keep going on, nothing to see. This is a clear and present danger to the sports that we love. And really, sports leagues have to use this as a wake-up call. I fear that they won't, though.
Well, thank you very much again joining me on the podcast, Declan Hill from the University of New Haven. And we'll have you on again to talk at length.
I'm a huge fan of yours, Bob. If there's anyone who doesn't like and follow the breaker news and would be followed by, you know, swayed by my opinion, I watch you, I read you constantly, even though I'm on the other side of the continent. You're doing fantastic work. So thank you.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Taiwan news, obesity tops military service exemptions in Taiwan. 17,000 men were excused from military service in 2024. A draft-dodging scandal involving celebrities has prompted the Ministry of National Defense and the Ministry of Interior to possibly revise physical classification standards for draftees. Currently, men with a body mass index over 35 qualify for an exemption, but the ministries are considering raising that threshold to 45. Among the top five reasons for exemption in 2024, being overweight accounted for about 30%. This was followed by a below average intelligence scores, autism, flat feet, and arrhythmia. In Kyoto news, football harassment scandal shines light on Japan's safe sport flaws. At Diosa Izumo FC, a women's second division team in Shimane Prefecture, two Brazilian players publicly alleged last November that they were subjected to sexual harassment by their Japanese manager, Yoji Sakai. Sakai denied the accusations, and the Japan Football Association decided it would not take disciplinary action, citing insufficient objective evidence. The Japan Women's Football League, which conducted its own investigation, concluded that Sakai had made abusive and sexual remarks that warranted punishment. In ABC News Australia, Chinese Communist Party body replaces 11 members amid corruption purge. A key meeting in Beijing this week has seen the highest central committee turnover since 2017. An anti-corruption czar in China's military was promoted to the number 2 general position. He replaces a senior general expelled last week. The sweeping call shows President Xi Jinping's determination to show his power to military command, say analysts. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Coin TV, Portland Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups placed on leave amid NBA scandal. Quote, "We are in the process of reviewing the federal indictment announced today," the NBA said in a public statement. We take these allegations with the utmost seriousness, and the integrity of our game remains our top priority, end quote. Portland Trailblazers assistant coach Tiago Splitter will step in as interim head coach. The FBI announced charges on October 23rd in two investigations about rigged sports betting and poker involving the mafia. In the Salish Current, despite the rain, this is what democracy looks like. Giant puppets representing freedoms detailed in the Constitution. Inflatable cartoon animals. Signs proclaiming power to the people and we love America. And, above all, no kings. Protest rallies on October 18th, well attended despite drizzly weather, were organized across the region at Point Roberts, Bellingham, Everson, Maple Valley, Shaw Island, Lopez Island, Orcas Island, San Juan Island, Anacortes, Cedro Woolley and LeConnor, and elsewhere across the country. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Exclusive! Thebreaker.news has BC Place's 2026 World Cup contract with FIFA after FOI battle. And Vancouver City Hall's top bureaucrats vow budget cutbacks will not affect FIFA World Cup 26. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.news podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Vancouver Canadiens, the single A affiliate of the Toronto Blue Jays, for keeping baseball alive at Nat Bailey Stadium and playing a part in getting the Blue Jays back to the World Series. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.news podcast for the week of October 26th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 26th of October in 1866, Irish-Canadian John Kinder Labatt, founder of Labatt Brewery, died? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca and on bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.